Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very special episode of Coffee Table Talk. With me, I have my co-host, Toast. And we have our fine guests from the great podcast, Nat One and Done. We have the DM, and we have the player who plays Tor. Please do go check these guys out on Spotify or any podcast service. And on their Instagram at NatOneAndDone. Welcome, guys.
Yo!
Thank you for having us, me, we.
both of them.
Yes. Both of them. You're accounting for the echo.
Yeah. So, there's three of them then. Oh. Sometimes yes. I truly do think Tor has 12 different personalities and his echo is just the one that gets to come out every so often.
Oh, it's gotten so much worse since he now has leveled up to the point of getting like the avatar feet so he could like see and talk and move physically through the echo. It's so hard to keep tabs on it.
It also allows me to go and have my echo anywhere that I am, 1,000 feet out in any direction with no worries of stoppage, and have the echo put in that area, and then I can see and hear through its eyes, or I can see through its eyes, hear through its ears, but my character is deafened and blind.
Oh, really? Oh.
So it's kind of like, do that, like I can relay a message, but then if they're trying to ask me questions, I can't hear them. So then I just start saying like random shit.
So you could be talking complete fucking gibberish. It's kind of like the Find Familiar in the sense where you are blind and deafened and you can't hear, can't see, and you're just this vessel that's standing there while you're in another body doing something else.
It's exactly that. He's essentially like, he's warging, but so now yes. That he has the avatar, if he gets smacked by something, the like vessel Tor has to come back and be like, ow, that hurt.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I mean, that's honestly, Echo Fighters are fucking awesome.
Yeah, I feel like they're not represented enough. I don't know of anyone that's actually played one besides myself out of all the people I know that play D&D or are associated with it.
Dude, have you DM'd for one yet?
I have not, but I mean, other than my co-host is having some technical problems at the current moment. Sorry, everyone. But we talked about somewhere further down the line, I have something planned in the story and it's going to be kind of a character, a class switch in a sense. And we've talked about making him an Echo Fighter. It's one of the things we've talked about.
Yeah,
for his character.
It's a lot less cool DMing for it.
I 100% bet that DMing for it fucking is kind of a pain in the ass, because now you got two people that are just back and forth, and it, like, he's there, but he's also there at the same time, and he can switch whenever the fuck he wants with his bonus action.
Yeah.
Like, I saw in the one fight that you had in your recent episode, episode 27, where he had gotten out of the jail cell with his echo, and then he was switching back and forth at a constant rate.
Yeah, dude, and that's before he got the avatar thing.
That was before he got the avatar thing?
Yeah, like, he's actually, like, 10 levels into it, so he has the 10th level feature of avatar form now, and there's been an adjustment period from the DM perspective.
I 100% I bet. I mean, truly, excited to see what that entails, but I'm also kind of nervous. I mean, I'm currently dealing with two custom subclasses that I've made personally for two of my players. We went over and talked. One was brought up to me. Actually, they were both brought up to me, and then one of them made the rules, and one of them I worked with. Quill and Stygius both have custom, complete custom subclasses. I think on both of them total, I've spent over 10, almost 12 hours figuring everything, figuring the balancing out, going over all their stuff along with their backgrounds and making sure everything's going to work. And still, the overpower ratio is nuts. They fucking wipe my... Quill wipes most of the fucking enemies I throw at her. Stygius is... He's a true wizard where he just stands in the back and just like, you know, I'll do a little something here and there, but...
Yeah, it's I definitely feel you on that because I worked with one of our players, Stony, on the development of his druid subclass, but it's been a little easier to manage as far as balancing because his druid is technically his cross class after being gunslinger fighter.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So his dip into druid is like a really cool homebrew subclass that is specifically tailored for the world and the story that we're playing. So I hope to include it in the module at some point when I drop that.
Oh, well, that'll be fucking awesome. Because that's interesting that you made a custom subclass for the world, because that's what Quill is. She's a custom subclass for my storyline and for what I had entailed. She spent some time writing, you know, like all of her powers. And the scary thing is there's so much to come further down the line that I am truly terrified once they do get to like level, I think it's level 18. She gets this crazy thing that allows her to have some of the spells of a paladin, for example, their divine smite. But be okay. able to use it, but be able to use it in her animal form.
Oh, dang.
So it's a very interesting cross, and you know, there's a lot of backstory behind that that I'm hoping at some point will come out. I mean, a little bit of it's come out here and there, but nothing that's given the clue drop to the audience that does listen or to my players. I mean, my players have no fucking clue what she actually is. My co-host is having extremely bad technical problems, so he's going to try to figure out his shit. He may or may not come back, so we're just going to run with it. But she hasn't given anything away. There is probably about 3 or 4 pages of backstory along with 3 or 4 pages of subclass, and it's a constant entwining mess.
Yeah, but in the end, dude, it's so rewarding to play with that and play with how it balances. I know one of the things that I faced with it, because Stony's been a gunslinger fighter for so long, I had to provide like incentive to occasionally use melee weapons and kind of balance that, because gunslingers on their own are a little busted.
100%. 100%. I've looked at that subclass. It's nuts.
Oh, the grit points have murdered me.
I don't doubt that, because I mean, with the advantages that come with it, the specific fighting style, and with the fact that in the new module of 2024, or D&D 1, however it's called, I mean, there's so many options for guns on top of that, and then the magical gun concept that they've brought into it as well. Like, for example, one of Rick, in one of our episodes, one of the characters that I brought from a previous campaign that I played in, he was my player. I thought I would throw a little fun thing in for another one of my players. because he DM'd it. I gave him a revolver, and the revolver, this is a very high level character. It was meant to be a very high level NPC. He had a revolver of the nine lives stealer, where if you crit on them and they have less than 100 hit points, they instantaneously die.
Tor wants a gun now.
No, no, we're not. Tor can't have guns.
Tor guns.
That would be hilarious. This big beefy bugbear with a fucking little tiny pistol.
Oh yeah, I like that 22 revolver that's always on, like, I think it's Palmetto State.
I believe so, yeah. Just that tiny little thing.
Rudy actually wants that.
Really?
He is debating buying one of those.
Yes.
Yes.
I was like, dude, that'll fit you so well. We just need to get you the old school leather holster. He has boots. So, I mean, he's set.
He's almost there. He's almost there.
Yes.
So, I do have a couple of just footnotes, things to talk about. One of my things that I have is, you know, for you guys, who brought up the idea to start Nat One and Done?
I no one else can really take credit for this. I think this was pretty much 100% CJ with a little soundboarding from Rudy. Is that right?
No, it was actually what were we discussing? I think we were discussing an episode of Tales. And we somehow got in the talks of D&D, and I think he had just gotten off that fucking Vox Machina. He was super addicted to that show, and he had just gotten off of like a kick with it, and he was like, damn, that shit's funny, but all the shit we're doing is like hilarious. And you know, every time I go back and think of what was happening, I just laugh my ass off. And he's like, man, maybe we should try and, you know, like record. And that's when the podcaster and me kicked in and was like, well, shit, we got the equipment, we got the know-how, we got the hosting knowledge, we got, you know, this, that, and the other. So I fully, fully agree. And it just kind of, we kept talking about it at work because him and I actually worked together. And we just kept talking about the stuff. And then we were like, fuck it, let's pitch it to everybody. And away it went.
Wow. And knowing from your history, I mean, you've told me a little bit, you've told me you've done podcasting for a long time, and we've had a discussion where I used to listen to one of your podcasts that you used to host. And I think that's awesome, because that's similar to how my thought for this went. I had the idea just out of the blue one day, you know, like, I love D&D. I love playing D&D. It was after one of my first sessions that I had played another campaign that I do on the side with my girlfriend and her cousins. And I'm like, I love listening to D&D podcasts. Why don't I make my own? You know, what's truly stopping me? And it was January of this year. I was like, fuck it, we're going to do it. I spent probably December. It was before, actually. I decided in December, and I had spent most of December and January finding players, getting everything, figuring out what I wanted to be called, figuring out my storyline. I spent hours and hours writing this story, figuring out how the players go in. It took it's a struggle finding players to play D&D and be willing to record at the same time. It's not always the easiest thing, but I did find my four good friends that, the two hunters, Toast is a hunter, and my other hunter that plays Rico in my, in our campaign, they're first time players. And,
oh, okay.
Cody Stygius is a longtime D&D fan. He's been playing, DMing, doing that for a while. And my girlfriend, who I had just the year before gotten into D&D, had convinced her, you know, let's do this. You know, she had texted me that her cousins wanted to do a campaign and they couldn't find anyone to run it for them. So I was like, let's do this. And I wanted to do something fun with it. So I used kind of the similar storyline that they're in. So a very fun fact about my campaign is the campaign that they're doing is in the same world that my players are in.
Oh shit. Okay. Sneaky, and, sneaky.
Yeah. And my goal is to eventually write a book of their story and add it. And along with the prophecy of Odysseus, they're called the tributes. So it'll be kind of a book into a secondary party that's going through the same world that these four random heroes, Quill, Stygius, Rico, and Damocles, they're doing their own thing, and it's kind of just another piece of this very big world that I've built.
Huh. That's really, it's come across in what I've listened to as something that's obviously been a passion project and has some really good, really thoughtful components of the story and the world already built into it. Mad respect for that. And now I'm slightly even more envious to hear that the time you spent crafting it, that is so quick.
Yeah. I've been sitting on these ideas for 2+ years, trying to like think of like, well, I want to DM again. You know, I want to bring this story that I've wanted to life, and it's really not the story of what's going on in the world and what's going to happen. It's the story of there are these people in the world that are going through some really fucked up shit, all because the gods are in a pissing match.
That's like, it's. My favorite thing about listening to you guys thus far, and I think I'm through three or four eps. I think I'm through three on four.
My oh, to favorite, Musgraves we go.
but honestly, you've been so gifted or simply captured lightning in a bottle with the players at your table, because they enhance the story of the world you've built so cool. And I've been doing this for quite some time. I think I've been playing D&D 20 years, and I've been DMing probably 16 of that. And so I recognize the work that's put in. That's probably the biggest compliment that I could possibly give, is the work you put into it and the contributions of the players at your table. It's cool. It makes for a great listen. You made a good decision to start recording this.
I you know, like I said, it was just that wild dream that I've always had, and I'm like, I want to do this. Truly, this is what I want to do. This is something that, I mean, it doesn't matter where it goes. I don't mind working a full-time job while doing my favorite thing at the end of every day. And, you know, it's the recording side and the editing side's a little tough, but every time we get to play actual D&D, that's my favorite moment, because that allows me to embrace that DM. And I've been DMing. I have played a couple sessions. I think I've been a player for about 3, maybe 2 months. And that's including about 4 or 5 sessions. I'm not specific on the time on that, but that's as long as I've played an actual character. I've been a DM since high school, and that's been the one thing that I've always enjoyed. Is I'm a storyteller. I'm very much, my imagination strings out a lot further than I can even handle at times, and I get wild, crazy ideas. My ambitions fucking stretch out before me, and it's a thing of like, I know there's reins to it, but I've always let my imagination run free because that's the one thing that I won't let anyone take away. I took it away from myself there for a while, but I used D&D to let it out. And then I learned to just embrace the fact that imagination is one of the biggest things that everyone either has and has dormanted or needs to bring back in their life, because that's the key to how you make or how you do what you want.
I wholeheartedly agree with that. And I think, especially now, we live in a climate where it's really easy to absorb D&D content. And one of the things that you probably hear if you choose to ingest that, especially in regards to DMing and being a DM, is like the DM burnout. Like, you put in so much time and stuff. And I'm like, I love this. Like, the world that I crafted for the Unseen Hand campaign series, that was like a year of dedicated world crafting before we sat down to actually play it. And at no point in that do I ever feel burnt out. Like, that's my passion project. That's my baby. Working on any of that stuff is always simply a joy for me.
And I feel the exact same way, truly. Like, when they talk about DM burnout, or, you know, like, oh, I get a lot of clips of like new DMs. And I mean, truly, I'm not a new DM, but I'm always trying to learn other things, trying to bring fun things into my games, trying to advance myself as a DM. And I've consumed a lot of D&D podcast knowledge. I mean, a lot of DM inspirations are like, you know, those big studio podcasts, like Not Another D&D Podcast and stuff like that, you know, etc. Critical Role, whatever. Like, they have great DMs, and those DMs have been doing that for a long time. You can learn a lot from listening to them. But to truly be a DM and not get burnt out is to figure out what type of DM you want to be, or what type of player you want to be. And is to find that peace with yourself of, okay, this is what I want my characters to be. You know, this is the fun aspects. These are the fun morals I want to try. And you don't get burnt out because you're constantly not only challenging yourself, but you are doing what you believe that you have the capability to do and what you want to do, what you want to see.
But see, now the sad thing for him is, because you were talking about, you know, what kind of morals you'd like to see in that setting. Yeah, he's playing with a bunch of moralist assholes.
But that's part of it. And that's one thing, like, I trust me, like, most of the only character that has really deep morals in my campaign is Stygius, is the person that plays Cody. He has like the deepest morals. All of them are murderous monsters. And I know if there was no balance, they would go on a full on killing spree. But at the same time, I like the challenge of having to figure out creative ways to not only change what my characters are doing, not only think about, okay, well, instead of murdering everything, how can I make you murder in a way that's not murdering, but role playing?
Oh yeah, no. See, I've flat out helped murder an entire village and take it over.
So to be fair, CJ has his perspective, and I'm also guilty of of pushing the moral limits of what the world will do to them as well.
Right. That's our challenge is, okay, these are immoralist monsters. How do we make them have morals? How do we make them think about, okay, instead of murdering an entire village, how do we make you not murder an entire village and have the entire village want to murder you?
Yeah, it's unfortunately for CJ, it's gotten quite a bit darker than that at some points.
I mean, it always does.
Yeah.
but it's all part of,
we don't talk about Bruno moment.
Yeah, it's all part of how that story unfolds, and you know, I create a loose outline of events that will or potentially will happen, and how they impact the story is the joy of how it changes and how those events actually unfold. And we just explained to all your listeners what D&D is.
I mean, but here's the thing though, is like for new DMs and new players, you know, the biggest thing to think about for new players, especially, I mean, I'm dealing with them. I love new players because their chaos is always welcome. I mean, I'm a very chaotic DM myself. Like I said, I set out just like you do. I set out loose guidelines, loose events off of what they're talking about. And, you know, I think where our podcasts are going to stand out is instead of focusing on an overall story, they make our story. They're the ones that whatever they do, it's not about our story. It's about them and their story. And I think that's a big thing that D&D is missing is, you know, DMs not only building something for their players, but building something around their players, around their not only what their player characters are, but their players themselves.
Yeah, and I think the most interesting part, and this is great, I get to put CJ on the spot like right now, is hearing about, well, like, how do you feel as a player in that storytelling style, in that type of campaign setting? What are some of your favorite aspects of it, or gripes if you have any?
Well, I would have to say, from my perspective, it gives me actually a bigger boost when it comes to like letting my Tor flag fly, because like I said, this campaign was after, you know, you had discussed it initially and what it was gonna be based off of, what it was gonna have, what, you know, kind of how it was gonna be. That told me, okay, it's time to do a story character, not just some OP broken kill everything that you can throw at us without sweating, but a strong story bound yet not super in game weak either character came to be from the setting and style. And then from there, kind of the way everything's played out, the way the story has gone, the way everything just kind of sucks you in and makes you just more intrigued as to what's going to happen next, that's where it gets even more enticing as to building up my character, giving him more backbone, more story, more oomph, you know, more just basically authority in the campaign setting, and is all the drive to enjoy it and, you know, give me my thoughts on it.
Yeah, I think it's sick, because this style of DMing, world building and storytelling that we kind of share really does bring out the maximum in the players at the table, because CJ alluded to it a little bit in that statement. And, you know, shifting from a player archetype like the min-maxer or the novice or whatever they are to just being players that feel immersed and feel like they impact things within the story, it just, it lets them shine at a level that's just different, and it brings out the best in of them in those role-playing situations.
And see, that's the, and I've noticed that in yours. And when I brought this idea to my players, I told them the world aspect. I mean, Stygius, the person that plays Stygius, has a guy knows D&D. He knows how to role play. He knows how to build a character off of a storyline. My new players don't. So what I told them is, okay, the one thing I want you to think about is this is our world base. I want you to play true to yourself, because the biggest thing in beginning is being able to be comfortable in your morals through your character, because that way you're not fighting yourself. It's not a conflict, you know? You're not butting heads with yourself when you're like, you're not like, you want to do this because that's what your character would do, but you're doing this because that's what you want to do. And sometimes the factor of that you want to do it as an actual person outweighs what your player truly is doing. So that was one of the biggest things. And that instantly intrigued them into building the character that they wanted to see in the world. And that's why, like, an example to yours, you know, building that story characters, they not only built their own story characters without knowing, and I wish Mykos was here because he is totally amped, because his whole character is based off of, he wanted it to be based off of some Roman mythology of someone that was once a soldier and then is turned to a weapon of vengeance from a god. Damocles sounds familiar because that's the name of the Roman warrior that changed from just being a soldier to then a vengeance of God, a weapon of a vengeful God. And that's one of the biggest things that we're trying to base in this world. So I've had to do custom. I've done a little bit of custom stuff to build his story the way he wants to see it and the way he wants to make it flourish, but also keeping it within the context of what we have going on.
It's not easy, is it?
it isn't easy, but I enjoy the struggle, truly.
Yeah. And if I could backpedal to the statement about creating a character where you kind of don't have that moral conflict between what the character would do and how the player genuinely feels. Upon psychologically analyzing that, now I'm concerned for CJ.
Oh, just no. Just wait for the further episodes. You'll see some shit. You want to see some all I'll say is turmoil.
See, and that's the fun thing about it all is I have no idea what's going through my players' heads at the moment. And I enjoy them taking, because like you said, Tori, they want to make the story. They want to actually have a storyline behind this character that they weren't looking to min-max, because that's not what it was about. It was about making it so they're constantly engaged and keeping engaged, because every time something comes up from their past that they wrote, it's like, okay, now I have to deal with this in my character, and it's the same to my morals. So it's not a conflict, and it just keeps bringing them back. And, you know, sometimes it's like, as a DM, for example, you're like, you know, I'm concerned about, like, are they really going to get to that point where they're going to either have turmoil with themselves or turmoil with the group? but I trust in them that what they do will make the story, because in all of this, they are my story. They are the passion that is coming into the story. This story is a lot of passion. It's my passion project, but they are the passion factor in the project.
Yeah, it's wild to play through a story that you've created, and the only parts that are unwritten are everything that the protagonists do.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you have no clue what they're doing.
Well, and think about this though. Your pitch for this campaign was so compelling that, I mean, if you look at the previous sessions before, like, I had trouble dealing with character sheet shit and items, and then I kind of came in like, I'm actually able to help answer all the questions that the other players have. And sometimes, you know, because we know Mr. DM's over there doing like 14 different things behind the scenes and then trying to recall that. So I try and splurt everything out that I can to also try and give him a hand. But it made me instantly increase my knowledge in all aspects of D&D. So that's a level of excitement to play right there.
Yeah, so that's this segues into kind of a cool tangent for me in speaking on the inspiration for the Unseen Hand campaign, and especially I say the early part of the game, but the first probably 20 or so sessions. Oh God, that feels crazy to say.
Right. I know, I'm going episode 10 and I'm already like, wow, I've already done 10 episodes of this shit.
Dude, there's so much on the stove right now. It's not done cooking yet, but
right?
It's going to be an epic gumbo.
But I had a lot of influence from just like my other passions that kind of culminated in the Unseen Hand campaign. A lot of it story wise is very loosely based on a lot of JRPG influence. Yeah. So there's definitely
ever.
Yeah, depending on how familiar you are, like with you know, games like Lunar or Final Fantasy or stuff within that realm.
And I'm familiar. I've played quite a few of the final. All DMs are game nerds. We all play video games, and that's where we find our inspiration.
Okay. I own the original first 10. Well, I guess it would be first 9 that were on PS1 and Final Fantasy X for PS2. I have all them in physical disc form.
Yeah, I got 1 through 12.
Wow. Wow.
So I'll just throw this out there. Have you ever played through or know anything about Final Fantasy VIII?
I have not been fortunate enough to play Final Fantasy VIII.
Okay. CJ and I are grossly attached to to this game. We shatter the Final Fantasy norm in which we favor 8 over 7.
Yeah, I think I have a total of like 600 hours in, if not more.
Like so many playthroughs. And so aspects of the beginning of our campaign, like the protagonists being orphans that are joining an elite military force. that's literally like essentially the start to that Final Fantasy game. And of course it's reskinned and there's a lot of components that are new and that are fresh and that are just mine to the story, but so many of those little influences sneak in there in different ways. And I think that's also plays a part in like the talking to your players beforehand. I mean, if not, this probably wasn't a session zero. This was like a session like -8.
I had one of those.
And so I presented kind of like the inspirations, and we were actually still playing another campaign at the time. I presented these concepts and these inspirations, and they were like, yeah, start making it like now. And I'm like, okay, give me a year and it'll be done.
See, for my inspiration, I'm a history junkie on top of loving video games. My inspiration for this was Greek mythology. And one of the biggest things, like, is when the gods in Greek mythology have a constant influence over the lands. And originally, that's what I was going to make this campaign base off of, was the Greek gods. But I was like, why do the Greek gods that everyone knows, and it's not overdone, it's not, you know, this or that, but why not make
Percy it... Percy Jackson, that bad boy.
Right. You know, Percy Jackson, I never read the books, but I'm like, movie, history, all of that type of stuff is my big stuff. I've never read the books of Percy Jackson personally. I'm
you alley-ooped to the reading. Joke I had to make.
I'm not really much of a reader. but
that's why I listen to audiobooks.
I can't even do that, truly. I have to physically be interested in the book and to a point where it's like that hyperfixation. I think I've only ever finished truly, I think I've only ever finished 5 books.
Were they the Harry Potters?
Nope. Damn, I haven't even read the Harry Potters, but I know so
much. Twilights.
Nope. It was a series of comic book-esque books that were around 100 to 200 pages long of this ghost type figure that was seen as a hero and did specific things. I wish I could remember the name of the books from the top of my head. But it's a dyslexia thing. I mean, it's tough for me to read sometimes. And I guess it's a little bit more because I have read all of the Dungeon Master. I've read all of the Dungeon Master, all of the D&D guides. Read all of them.
Hell yeah! I mean, they're worthy of a read.
They are. There's a lot of information that is hidden or very specific, and there's a lot of stuff that I don't like about it, and that's what I change.
Okay. Fair enough.
I like the god concept. Yeah, I like the gods in the pantheon of the Forgotten Realms.
If you're playing with a DM that's like super like stick to the book by the book, because then there's some shit that unless you've had to deal with certain situations before or just a specific style of playing, then you have like a whole separate hidden thing of rules that a lot of people don't know. And I think that kind of fucks with and scares away a lot of newer people trying to get into D&D is if they find that kind of DM.
Yeah, because that alone can be daunting at times.
Hey everyone, Coffee Horse here. At this point in the talk, I had a technical problem arise. But before we get back into that, let's hear a brief word from Nat One and Done.
Hello, adventurer. I'm Lloyd, Dungeon Master of Nat One and Done, a Dungeons & Dragons actual play podcast that follows our group in a chaotic blend of traditional D&D play, humorous downtime both in and out of play, and a rich story with amazing players and characters. Join us as we embark on a campaign and some side quests where critical success and failure play an equal part in our story of mystery, danger, romance, intrigue, and a whole lot of fun. We are Nat One and Done, and we hope you come along with us on our quest for a good time.
Well, I just want to thank Nat One and Done for coming on to my show, and do go check them out. You can find them on Instagram at Nat One and Done, and any of your podcast streaming services. These guys have been awesome. They're great to work with. They're great to talk to. And I'm excited to see what comes along in the future. Now, let's get back into our coffee talk.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. It's
Oh, okay. There, I'm back. I'm sorry about that. My internet literally just crashed.
Oh no.
But like I said, off of the Greek mythology, I wanted to twist it into the D&D realm. Mm-hmm. And then completely rewrite the lore of the gods.
Okay.
For this new world. So I left the gods' names and their titles and what they're known for with their symbols all the same, but I completely rewrote their whole entire lore and what they've done in the world. For example, in my session zero, I talk about the Dawn War, and we haven't really gotten into that in the campaign wise, but the Dawn War was a giant event in the world of Odysseus. And also, I haven't gotten into the fighting between two deities that split the island once again. That's all very fun things that are in my lore table that I have been waiting to share, but we're not at the moment where all of that lore is starting to come up. I think, for example, one of the biggest things that did come up was when I talked about a group called the Mad Dogs, that is part of the lore to one of my gods that I haven't got to completely share.
Yeah, and figuring out like how to disperse that lore is really tough, and it kind of ties into that DM issue of you're holding on to all of these really, really cool things that you've created and you want to talk about. And at least for me, all of my friends that I would share cool stuff with are the players at my table. So
right. I understand that 100%. I want to share so much with my girlfriend, and she plays Quill. I mean, but I can't, you know, there's so much lore behind all of that. There's so much lore behind her alone that's twisted into the campaign itself and into the other campaign that I'm doing with her cousins. There is so much lore built into that I wish I could share, and I wish I could give the moment. Some of it has come out in pieces that I've figured out like key points of where to throw it. I believe I talk about one of the few lore pieces that I talk about is someone by the name of Delaney, which is a big lore key that I'm hoping to reveal at some point. It's been kind of like picked at by my players, but hasn't taken root yet. And another one is Musk. That one, there's been a little bit, sorry, not Musk, Mask, the god Mask. His lore's come a little more forward with some of the things that have been said. Like Musgraves is known as I'm pretty sure for a while I said Musk when it's Mask, but it's called Musgraves because the god's disciples that used to run Musgraves were followers and disciples of Mask. And the lore I did drop, which is this is further in, I think around episode 4, episode 5, not to give too much of a spoiler, but he, as far as anyone knows, he no longer has any presence over the lands or in the realms of the Pantheon.
Oh, damn. Okay. Huh.
I feel that on another level with the whole, like, not spoiling things and figuring out the right moments to do that. And I think that's gotten twofold since, and here's the shameless plug, since I started doing Nat 1 and done lore loot.
Plug it.
As a weekly running thing in which I try to share some of those components that are there and in the world, and I guess would and could be common knowledge, not just to the players, but to the listeners at that point as well. And then we have a secondary layer for that as well, because we are in our story pretty significantly further along than where the listener is in our released episodes.
Right.
So I also have to be cognizant of that and be like, oh, I can't even mention this. Like, that makes no sense. We haven't been anywhere near that topic yet.
And I understand that. I mean, we do our recordings a little, because you guys do, like, you guys are able to record 2 episodes in 1. I'm a very raw, like, raw focused, where I do a session and I edit it and I post it within a day's matter. And the reason I wanted to start Coffee Talk is because I wanted to invite, I mean, people like you guys. I mean, you guys make great content. I personally have been enjoying some of your content. It's been really fun for me to listen to. And I want to build, it's back to, you know, D&D is a community. And I think there for a long time, and I think in the mainstream media sense, it's seen as these are your higher ups and anyone that is below them has no ground. And it's not that you should only listen to them, but they make it seem like if you're not listening to them or the podcast that they support, that you aren't listening to the real D&D stuff. When really there's probably thousands of us that make D&D content, make D&D related things that are kind of on a back burner waiting for this time to shine, when really there are people that aren't looking for that mainstream stuff. There's people that are looking for podcasts like us, real tabletop stuff, not studio-esque, not studio made, but actual just people doing a passion.
There's
for sure. And it, not that there's not a space and an audience for those really great D&D products, but not everyone is, you know, an actual actor or a voice actor appearing in video games and stuff. And that is in no way like a slight to those people. I love and adore so many of the people doing that in the space, but it does tend to kind of dwarf people like the ones talking right now, who are living, eating, and breathing D&D in the classical sense, and want to share that with people as well.
And just saying, no one's gonna, you know, try and harsh Tours vibes. No one.
And I think, you know, like, one of the first things is when I did start listening to D&D podcasts is like, you feel like if you ever want to do it, you have all this expectation. You have to have, for example, like Critical Role. I mean, they're all voice actors. Yeah, that's awesome. And they do it as a side thing, but they still do their voice acting. And so you can know them from multiple standpoints. Well, you've almost, when you listen to them and you're like, well, I want to do that, you almost feel like you have to have that before you even start. You almost feel like you need all of that stuff to start. But really, all you need to have is a drive and a passion and the courage to just be like, I just want to do this.
Yeah, no, that's really all you need. Because, I mean, you could technically get started with a fucking iPhone, a basic Android, and a fucking app, and you just start recording the shit and then, you know, releasing it. Like, as long as you have that drive, you can make it happen. That's for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, I think listeners and consumers of the product also can unknowingly rob themselves of the joy of, you know, you might love Grog Strongjaw, but have you met Tor Ironside?
Right.
Yes, he and has.
Ironhide. I fuck it up every time.
It's okay. Ironside, you're, Ironhide. You're forgiven. But he has met me. We're talking right now.
Yeah, I feel like it does rob you, because you're forced to feel like you have to just listen to them or listen to the ones like, I think it's great that, you know, Critical Role is sponsored Midst, which is a third person storytelling. Like, I mean, great for those guys, but for us that are not as popular as them, don't have hundreds of thousands of people coming onto streams, or don't have hundreds of thousands of views on a daily basis, you know, we're just doing this because we love it. And it doesn't matter if it gets to anyone's ears, we're doing it because this is our passion and we want to share it. And those that do choose to listen, those that do choose to give us the time to genuinely listen to the content and the stories we're telling, those are the true, real followers. Those are the true, real people that don't just want to hear one story, that want to hear multiple stories. And I think in the near future, I think you're going to have these big studio podcasts, but you're also going to have a community of podcasters, a community of D&D podcasters that are all going to be lifting themselves and others up with them to show that small groups do make a difference. Many is much more powerful than one.
Yeah, and that principle of yours is such a big part of why this connection has been made, and why us and Nat One really support that idea and that ideology of, man, it's a new time, it's a new era, and it's really hard to ignore people in this space when we've now formed a community. And we have quality and quantity on our side. We have both in spades.
Yeah. Yeah. I truly, it's not just, it's not just, you know, there's a group of live streamers that live stream their DMs and it's growing. Like there are more, I check on the promote yourself on a lot of podcasts and on like Discords, that like your Discord, Dungeon Boys, another shout out to them. They're another great, they're great people making great sci-fi stories. And I've even Sci-Fi Torg, that's where they have laser guns and cool spaceships.
Well, what's a laser?
Oh, shiny but deadly.
Oh, it's like me.
Yes, yes, shiny but deadly, but very bright and hurt your eyeballs. Don't want to get hit by.
Oh, I'll avoid those lasers.
And, you know, eventually I feel like it's not going to be a takeover, but it's going to be, we are so loud in all of our different ways that people, it's not, they're going to be given a choice of whether they want to just follow these studio podcasts or give all these great and creative stories a try.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what it comes down to, is it shouldn't be, oh, these guys are fans of ours, so guess what? They got to stick with us. Or, you know, oh, these guys don't like you. Well, oh, screw them. That can't be happening. Like, it should be, especially being D&D is about community. It's about making friends. Like, that's its whole purpose, is building connections. So why is it that, you know, why would that be any different from doing the podcasting? Like, we could all easily, yes, try and be out there and just, you know, keep sections and everything like that for ourselves. Or we, you know, since we all have our own niche, our own way of doing things, our own just things that will intrigue different parties. Well, okay, well, hey, if you like this kind of comedy or this kind of story, oh, go check these guys out. If you want this kind, go check these guys and these guys. Like, you know, sharing is caring. And the more, at that point, one grows, the more everybody grows. And at that point, you're just creating the world's largest fucking podcast family at that point.
And that's what I want to see. Truly, I want to see not just one. I want you guys to grow. I want you guys to elevate just as much as I want to see myself elevate. Because we're a community and we love, it's not about what we create. We all have our different things. But I feel like when you have to, when you've picked that niche, when you're like, well, we have to do this, you know, you're stuck. As a DM, I don't want to be stuck to one thing. I want to be creative. I want to be able to do something wild. Yes, I have a God campaign running right now, but my next campaign might be about a bunch of hobos that come into the real world and have to kill giant fucking monsters, you know? I want to be able to outsource my creativity just as much as you. I want to see you guys be just as creative as I am, because truly that's what D&D is about, and that's what D&D needs to be about, because that's why it was started. And D&D has a past of being called many things. For example, a cult. Yeah, we're a big fucking cult of nerds.
When they were going over the first Dungeon Master's Guide and shit.
Yeah, we're just a big fucking cult of nerds that all want to share really dumb, hilarious, dramatic, not dramatic stories with our friends and watch it bloom.
Yeah, we want you guys to laugh your asses off at one moment and then cry your little eyes out the next moment because your favorite character just died, or some crazy shit happened. They lost their family, just something epic that's gotta kind of upset you and just draw you in more. But the more, you know, you guys are in your DMing, it's... it
creates enjoyable things to listen to. It's not just something so basic and so overdone and so saturated in just the genre of any RPG out there that, you know, it just kind of drowns out.
Yeah, and being able to do something that's, I think, really hard to do in human nature, and that's start to ditch the crab mentality of, oh, dude, if you're crawling out of the bucket, that means I can't. That has nothing to do with it. Just being in a space of, you know, my growth doesn't hinder yours and vice versa, and coming together in a space of something that we all love, we all enjoy in its many forms. Because, man, if there isn't a better example of D&D could be very different things. You put our two campaigns side by side, and it's like, yeah, dude, it's almost like a totally different game, but it's still D&D.
100%. I was on a Discord not too long ago, and I had just joined the Discord, and they were like, you know, if you blow up, you know, they made the comment of, you know, you should be the next Critical Role, so that way you can give free advertising. And to I believe it was another podcast that I had was talking to at the moment. And it's not that I want to be the next Critical Role. No, I want all of us to be the next Critical Role. I want all of us to be, when we're at the point where we're up in another level of podcasting, when we have hundreds of thousands of people coming to listen to our stuff, we're not sitting on our high horse and being like, you know, no one else come up to me. You know, we're not scared. We're not scared of each other. This is why we're having this conversation. We are coming together as a community because we love the game, and we love everyone that creates their own story, creates their own thing. Yes, you can listen to multiple podcasts. They're all, some of them may be about God, some of them may not, but guess what? There's always going to be a different factor, because just like people, all of our stories are different. And that's the big thing that you guys have done. You guys have captured it. I'm capturing it. As people, we are all different, and our stories are all different. So if you're able to share a fake character story in their own way, there's nothing that could beat it, because it's true human nature. It's watching someone flourish, struggle, and grow. And yes, it may be fiction, but guess what? To you, it's like reading a book. It's like watching a movie.
It's the fiction we live.
Yeah, it's dude, it's so cool, because it could be mythology retold. It could be, oh my God, I'm saying this sentence out loud. JRPG over the top fantasy, you know, inspired. It could be whatever. Yeah. And it's not, just like we haven't locked ourselves into the type of art we create and the type of stories we tell, it's okay not to lock yourself into the box of how you consume that as well.
Yeah, we're all here to listen. I'm a podcaster, and I listen to these guys, and I listen to several other podcasts all at the same time. I have a rotation I go through. Every time a new episode comes out, I'm listening to one of them.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's multiple a day. I mean, for example, I know you guys have, like, all us smaller podcasts, we can't do this for a living. We have to work side jobs. I mean, for heaven's sakes, some of the players that, like, my girlfriend, she loves D&D, but is that what she wants to do? No, she wants to train horses.
Hell yeah. I think that would be an interesting as hell job. I don't know how to train a horse. I can train a dog, but I don't know about a horse. I mean,
it's a whole different level. It's a whole different level.
Jay Thickums is pretty well trained, but
Oh, Jay Thickums is Tor's horse.
Yeah, he's my boy.
But yeah, just all of those different facets of the situation combined, it's really cool to be sharing a space with individuals like yourself. And I think it makes us at Nat One just more excited to keep diving into it and to keep pumping the energy that we are into the project. It's been cool. It's been like a little reinvigoration spike.
I'm motivated by those every time that I get a reach out, or I reach out to someone and they respond and they want to chat. That is the biggest motivator in my life. When you guys answered me, I hope you know that was huge for me. That was absolutely huge. That gave me the confidence to be like, I can do this. We can build a community of people that love D&D. The one thing that I've always wanted to see, the one thing that I always felt like was missing from the D&D. You know, we are a community, but we feel separated.
Yeah, and that definitely needs to not be the case.
Dude, let's have one big table and everybody could be a part of that table, and taking that figurative speech of our D&D tables and expanding it to
how we
put out our stuff and our pro.
I think we all need to get together, all DMs and players. Not, it doesn't have to be every single player, but those that are willing, and we all get in one big conversation and we all talk about what we love and what we want to see for this big D&D community, and we all post it and we show that all of our voices together posting one big thing is going to get much more outreach than just one big studio posting a simple episode.
Well, hear me out. One, earlier you said about being scared. I am scared of you two, mother truckers, because it's one player and two fucking DMs. How?
I'm sorry. My player left. He was.
What? Tor doesn't like being alone. No, but I hear me out. Get this community going and then have the largest ever set session where all the podcasts combine into one shot ran by all the DMs cooperatively against all of us players.
That would be awesome. And not just over, I mean, we'd have some live DMs. I say we all try to meet together in a space. We all plan it out. And it's pretty much just a big meet and greet for each other. We all meet each other. We all hang out. And then we make one really big one shot.
Oh, that'd be great. And we disperse the DMs so no DM is touching or interacting with any of their actual players.
Right. We have no communication with our players. Our players are off.
Oh, man.
And what it is it's a constant switching rotation of DMs. One DM is saying another. It would be truly the perfect chaos. And I love chaos in the world, and that would be the most perfect chaos. Players and DMs all together in this one big mosh pit playing D&D.
Well, now you're speaking my second language, mosh pits. No, but yeah, that would be insanely sick. I just feel bad for the DM who gets the unseen hand.
I mean,
same.
Who knows? I would, and the coolest part about the one shot would be we have all of these DMs. It would be like an all DM conversation. It's in one world. All of these different parties are in this one world, and it's a constant chaos happening throughout.
We would
DM
thrive.
Musical chairs.
DM musical chairs.
Oh yeah. No, that would be, I think, the most intensely fucking insanely fun thing out there.
That would be absolutely, truly, that would be fucking awesome to see. That would be absolutely awesome to see. Have all of these small DMs come together and make one really big piece, and all of our players come together and make one big mass of chaos.
Oh, I'm here for it.
And check it out, though. If we got enough DMs to where we could, like, it could be split into teams equal. So each leg of the race, the challenge, whatever, is with a separate fucking DM.
Mm-hmm. So players go from DM to DM for every different section.
Yep.
And it's all a different story. And in the end, it's all the DMs versus all of the players in an epic final battle.
Yes.
Oh, dude. We all make like a DM PCs.
Yep. Our DM PCs against all of our players. Our ultra overlords that we want to see come to life. It's every DM's dream to make their own, to make a character that is the most powerful and most fucking insane thing and use it against your players. I have that dream ever so often.
Dude, I have the dream of just like playing a level 3 character every now and again.
Yeah, I do too. I also have the dream of like playing a level 20 and be like, this is so cool.
I just want to know, do you think you DMs could get a TPK of that size?
I think that would be the challenge.
100%. 100%.
I don't know if we could, truly. I don't know if we could. If all of us came together, you know, like they all went through the different races, they all came to a different story and they all met, and we gave you players an hour to set up and us DMs an hour to set up, I feel like it would be a close fucking fight.
Here's the reason why I'm confident in my DM homies. We have practice week in and week out of dealing with them. They have zero experience of dealing with us.
And that's the truth. I will give you that. That is the truth. They have no clue what ideas if we're like, could we just do this? You know, just like, you know, wouldn't it just be so fun to just throw a really, really stupid broken monster at them and then just sit there and watch it happen?
So are you saying I should cause insane chaos in the next session? Is that what I'm hearing?
Hey, this is an unrelated hypothetical situation here.
You got lucky. You got lucky. The coin said no.
Ooh, the coin said no. You did get lucky.
I did.
35 immovable rods.
Yes. No, so funny story. I actually had a character in another campaign that turned immovable rods into weapons. I had a smith that was able to turn them into swords. And I was it was amazing. So I stabbed a person and activated it so they couldn't do anything because they were just stabbed into the ground with it. And then with the other one, I could just go apeshit again.
Oh my god, that's why I won't give my players immovable rods. I've thought about it several times, but I'm like, the amount of power an immovable rod has, it's just like a bag of holding. Our players could truly just fill it full of fucking water and squeeze it fast enough, and the water would act like a power jet, being able to cut our bosses in half.
Why are you giving away my secret?
Edit that part that Tor said that out so your players can't ever hear it.
Oh, they don't listen to this.
Just saying, players, if you ever need a hand, get over Tor.
Nat one and done.
At unfortunately, Tor always rolls a bunch of fucking nat one and duns.
Oh, dude, he got an award for it at our cabin event.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I got the method actor for basically always being Tor, never stopping, in or out of game. and rolling the most nat ones, which I've done, I think, 4 or 5 in one session.
The most nat ones I've had in one session, but collectively between me and all my players, is 10.
Yeah.
That is the most nat ones. And 6 of them came from Quill. Oh, I was trying to attack someone, and every other roll was a natural one. On one, so one of her things is she has a multi-attack,
mm-hmm.
and she gets pack tactics when an ally's close by. So she constantly has fucking advantage. It's the bane of my existence, but I live with it. But she rolled a nat one to hit in one, and then rolled a 7, and then another natural one, and then rolled 2 more natural ones before she said, fuck this, I'm actually going to get actual dice, and then proceeded to roll 2 more natural ones. I was like, are you, that is nuts. That is nuts.
I think I've actually done the polar opposites as well, where I rolled a nat 1 and then a nat 20 right after for my next roll.
Yeah, because Tor also multi-attacks, so he's had several situations where, and we play remotely, so we play on like one of the VTTs. We actually use Roll20. Shout out, I love that product. But you know when you roll in Beyond or whatever it is, and you get the natural one, and it's red.
Yeah.
He's had the moment where he rolls it for one of his attacks and it's like, fuck. And then it's green the next number. Yeah.
Yeah, that's when Tor really comes out.
I don't use D&D Beyond because I have physical dice and I call them God dice because they are made out of fucking like cast iron steel. They're the heaviest. You can hear me roll them in some of the episodes. That's what that noise is.
Can confirm, have heard it.
Those are the God dice. They are about like this big, but they are fucking like the whole dice set alone weighs like 3 to 4 pounds. And I roll those and I have gotten some crazy rolls on them. And sometimes my dice are very brutal. And sometimes I have to be a little bit nicer than my dice want to be.
Oh, see, I thought you were going somewhere completely different with that. Like, oh yeah, sometimes my dice are brutal. Like this one time, I rolled a nat 1 and it hit my girlfriend right in the fucking forehead. I was expecting like
she's
crazy.
She's in the other room. I can't throw dice through the walls.
I was like, oh damn, that would have been a crazy story.
I think one time I should have just went with it, but there was one time where I rolled in total. I kept rolling and I kept this track to myself. It was right at the beginning and I didn't want to instantly kill my players, but I was trying to give them somewhat of a challenge to try to figure out the balance. I rolled 3 natural 20s in a row.
Damn.
I should have just stuck with them, but I just sat there and looked at the dice and go, huh. If you ever hear me go, huh, you know that I'm looking at my dice going, huh, what should I really do here?
So my question is, if in bowling, when you get, you know, what is it, 3 strikes in a row, that's called a turkey, could it be called a griffin in D&D?
I think that's fair. I feel like if you roll 3 natural 20s in a row, I feel like some crazy shit should happen, whether it be DM or player. Some crazy shit should just happen because the likelihood of rolling 3 natural 20s is insane. It's more likely to roll 3 natural 20s than it is to roll 3 natural 1s.
Not in my book.
Oh, that's so sad. But that is factually true. I think that's why there's been this movement. So I'm getting hard derailed here, but
Go ahead, derail us.
Have you heard about the fair dice?
Oh yeah, they're made perfectly so every roll is going to be a different number.
Yeah, and they do this like weird thing with probability where like the sum of four of the little
closest dice to the middle one, like the closest numbers to the middle one, is equal to the other. I've seen those. Yeah. I've truly seen those.
That's a wild product. That's, I have several different versions of those sets on my wish list currently.
You need to send them my way because Tor needs that in his life.
No, yeah, you just have to keep rolling.
Tor needs balance. He needs some balance in his life.
He does, god damn it. I'd like to be able to hit multiple times and actually hit, not, you know, whiff.
Well, the cool thing for me is, and this could be a hot take either way, is that in the Unseen Hand campaign, because we play, you know, 99% of our games on a VTT, I've never fudged a roll for my group ever. If I roll, you know, three critical successes, and we have the unique homebrew mechanic of when we crit, it's auto max damage. We don't.
Oh, you do auto max?
Yeah, so, we do auto max.
Okay. So for my critical, I do, you get max damage of the first. So I do double plus max of the first. So you roll your normal dice, but you get the max damage of your normal dice. So for example, Damocles does 1d8 plus 7 bludgeoning damage. So he does a total of 15 damage, and then whatever he rolls on top of that is what the crit is.
Okay. Yeah, dear God, I would have killed these guys already if we played with
them. See, you do the max damage, which I thought about doing, and that was one of the big things that I like wanted to figure out for my crits, is like what to do, because there's a lot of different ways to crit. I mean, double, like you either double your dice or you roll the same dice twice. And D&D Beyond, if you crit, they make you roll you get to roll the dice twice, which every time they crit, they're like, oh, it rolled it twice. And I'm like, just forget about it. Just forget about it. Just roll it again. And then I'll give you max damage on the attack plus what you roll. So I throw some pretty heavy shit at them, and I'm still figuring out the balance. And I think my balance is just going to be throw their level 6, throw level 12 things at them, CR12 things at them, because they can somehow proceed to handle those things.
Yeah.
And that's minding you, that's two of my players. That's only two of my players fighting.
So which of your players would you say causes the most purposeful chaos?
That's tough. The purposeful chaos would have to be Damocles, 100%. Toast. He causes the most purposeful chaos in what he does, because he's a big strong man his intelligence is a -3.
Oh god, he has, okay, so his is worse than Tor. Mine was -1, but now it's at 0.
Yeah, his is a -3 or -2. He is truly retarded, but he is very wise. He's very wise.
Wise-tarded.
Yes. He may not be able to tell that it's a tomato, but he does know what tomato tastes like.
He knows not to put tomatoes in fruit salad.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, and he also can't persuade anyone to buy a tomato to save his own life. And then I have another, and then my rogue, which is very funny. My rogue is a super perceptive. Rico, the other hunter, is very perceptive. His perception is currently, I think, at level 6, a 27 is his passive.
God damn.
Yeah, he can see, but he cannot talk his way out of anything to save his own goddamn life. His charisma is a -2.
Oh, no.
Sounds a lot like dealing with an Echo Knight and a Rogue Monk hybrid that I have to deal
by
with
the way,
on a weekly basis.
That Rogue Monk hybrid is nuts. That is nuts.
It's difficult to hurt him, dude.
I'll only take half.
I know. He just goes, I'm only going to take half of that. What? You're just going to pull an uncanny dodge on my ass? A deflect attack?
That's what I loved about playing Rogue. That, and for some reason, typically in the past, all my characters have been thieves.
See, that was what my first character was. And then I played Baldur's Gate 3, and I learned that I love bards.
Ah, okay.
I am very much, if I ever did get to play, I would probably play a bard, and all of my one-shot villains are very charismatic, in a sense. So I was going to bring it into our fun little project that we're going to be doing here soon. I'm not sure about our other guest, but I think I am going to have you three and maybe two of my players. I'm actually going to be talking with them this Saturday. So we will see who I have on board. And if not them, I'm going to, I actually got outreached by, I don't know if you guys saw, but there's another D&D a podcaster, and it's called One Shot D&Ds, and he's in Australia, actually.
Oh,
and
shit.
I'm meeting with him in it would be 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. his time, which is 2 to 4 a.m. my time.
Oh, nice.
GG, friend. So, GG.
Shout out to One Shot D&D. I'm going to be meeting with him. And I will see, maybe we can get him on our special little project that we're working on. If not, hell I yeah. will let you know who's game, and we will set a time and date for that.
Hell yeah,
I'm
my guy.
I'm so looking forward to it. I get a player.
Yes, you do. And a level 16 player at that. Not just level 3, a level 16.
Should I bring Scar?
Bring whoever you want. This is truly this one shot, and the way I've written it out, where I come into play is very minimal. What really happens is, of course, what we've talked about.
Hold it back.
I will. I'm going to. I'm not going to let this out because. It is going to be so cool, and I think it's probably one of the first of its kind. I've not seen another one shot like it.
I dig it. I actually have one cool question about it. So
go ahead, hit me.
We're level 16s in this eventuality, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Level 16 characters have like at least one magical item, right?
Oh, you guys are able to have at least a magical armor, a magical weapon, and a wondrous item.
Okay. I'm going to apologize. Like, I'm going to apologize ahead of time for what I'm about to do to you.
Oh, no. Don't worry. Trust me. It's not, it's...
He's like, oh.
You don't have to, I don't have to feel anything.
I got you, man.
Yeah, don't reciprocate it, dude. Don't reciprocate it.
No, he's ready.
I don't
ready
have to feel anything.
Like, I got you, homie.
I'm ready. I've come up with every possibility. I've looked at every legendary artifact or magic item possible.
Ooh, see, now you're...
So I'm ready.
Now you're making me want to talk to this guy and... in a DM on Discord and be like, hey, so he thinks he's ready, is he?
Oh, trust me. I have DM'd for a lot of crazy people in my younger DM stages. I know the power of magic items. I know what they can do.
Are we locked to, like, WotC content?
You.
He's like, oh shit.
Well,
let me know the manual of what magic item yours comes from so we can make sure we can get it.
CJ or I will gift you the digital content of which we grab anything from.
That is greatly appreciated. Greatly appreciated, because D&D Beyond is kind of a killer, and that's what we use. You know, we use D&D Beyond for all of our stuff.
So I actually just got on a call with this guy yesterday to get some assistance in building in Roll 20, because I use D&D Beyond as well. I have majority of like the main books that have come out that allow character creation. So I use that with it's a little program called like Beyond 20 or some shit. I'd have to look to verify, but
yeah, Beyond 20 is the
the
integration tool from D&D Beyond to be able to utilize it in Roll 20.
Yeah, so I roll from my page on Beyond and it appears in Roll 20.
Ooh.
There's a ton of cool shit to try. Like, I still want to try out, and I'm not saying this means anything bad about Roll 20. I've just heard some cool shit about one called Foundry. And
I've heard about Foundry.
Yeah, and I'm really debating making that purchase, because you have to buy it, but it's a one-time fee of $50, and then you have updates and everything for life. But
so many good products out there.
Great products.
Yeah.
And it's really,
and it's growing.
Yeah. And it's so cool because they all do different things really, really well. I find that Roll 20 is the cool medium for me of, it's totally customizable. So let's say, you know, CJ has purchased his books from third-party publishers and he wants to make that within Roll 20. The character Mancer allows him to do that really easy. It's just a bunch of copy and pasting, to be perfectly honest. And it allows all of the... I can create all of my maps and very easily integrate them into Roll 20. I'm not paying for maps. I'm not paying for book contents. I'm not doing any of that. But then there's things like Foundry, where just the way you can create and present maps is honestly next level. It's so good.
That and some of the integration packages you can download directly to it, and the fact that basically being that once you buy it, you own it. It adds a lot more to like customization of like sound and stuff like that. But I've also seen kind of how you were showing me the other creation side of Roll 20, how it had those effects. Foundry has like full on things that you can download that have like thousands of spell effects. And
Has that to like the 10th power. And I've, you know, as a DM, I find myself toying with or consuming tutorials on all of these different things. So, I don't know. I'm never going to stop making D&D stuff. So, I might make a campaign in this platform, a one-shot in this one, a secondary campaign in this one. And it's fun to play with those tools and how it impacts what I'm trying to do, or maybe one product really suits a certain narrative or setting that I'm trying to convey with the story that I'm telling in a different scenario.
100%. I mean, I use D&D Beyond because that's what I've used the most, truly. I've used a lot of D&D Beyond. D&D Beyond has been a steady, consistent thing, but I have seen other things like Roll 20 and that, and I just really haven't had a time to really experiment with those. And I do agree that those other products are great, because it does give you that other, you know, okay, well, I'm doing a campaign in D&D Beyond, and then I'm doing another campaign or a one shot that I want to try out and roll 20. You know, it just all these different products that give you such a great advantage to be a better DM and give you all of these other helpful tools is it's really insane to watch. All of these great products come up. I mean, D&D Beyond's doing great things to try to make their stuff cooler, you know, try to incentivize people to join their stuff. But there's so much content out there, you almost can't just pay for one. It's just like streaming services.
Yeah, for like, I absolutely agree with that statement. And dude, again, it's that other thing of being a DM and playing with these different platforms adds to that big pool of D&D knowledge to be able to share with players and other DMs so we can help each other more easily navigate everything that we're trying to do inside that space.
Well, that and the module thing too is very like Linux reminiscent for me, so I'm like, oh yeah, I enjoy fiddling with that, so I think this would be fun as shit too.
Yeah, and when more and more of them are adding, like, I'm sure you use Beyond, so I'm sure you've accessed things like the homebrew classes, so you can kind of make your stuff.
Homebrew creations. It's a, yeah. It's a glorious thing.
Yeah, so that's kind of Beyond's version of being able to take what you have from another book and make it playable for your players. You know, you could do that with Beyond. You could do that in the Character Mancer of Roll 20, and the both of them have different stuff in the visual representation of what you're presenting to your players. I know Roll 20 has a really cool feature for us DMs who are really adamant about sharing our stuff. So, you know, you could create and publish modules and supplements for people to either access free or, you know, charge for that product on the platform of Roll 20. So yeah, man, cool stuff in all of those different directions. And I find myself all the time like, what am I going to use?
I feel that. Well, I think we've reached our limit. I don't want to hold you guys any longer. I have enjoyed talking to you guys, and I'm bummed that my co-host had some huge technical difficulties and was unable to join us. But thank you guys again. I want to shout out to you guys at Nat One and Done on Instagram, and go check them out on any streaming service that streams podcasts, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. You can find our podcast and our talk show at Coffee and D&D on Spotify, soon to be on YouTube, and hopefully some other streaming services as we get things going.
Hell yeah.
But
go listen to it. It's good.
We have good stuff.
You will not be disappointed.
Well, I hope to see all that do listen and all that do learn all this fun information about being a DM and a player to keep coming back to our campaign and our talk show. Catch you all on the next one. And make sure we all stay well caffeinated, because caffeinated chaos is the best type of chaos. Toodaloo, everyone.